There it goes. Okay, so the meeting is called to order at 8:32 p.m. Eastern Time. Roll call once again. Kim Laird, Chair, is present. Kevin Axell?
Present.
Matt?
Present.
And Richard Kennison?
Present.
Dave Pawson?
Present.
Tom Wall?
Present.
Aaron Stevens is absent this evening. Mike Sullivan?
Here.
Marilyn Sullivan?
Here.
And Martin Frost, Communications Director, is not here. Sandy Brown, Recording Secretary?
Here.
And we also have with us tonight Cameron McEwen?
Here.
And Scott Krause?
Here.
Lloyd Timberlake?
Here.
And Nathan Wakefield?
Here.
And welcome to our four nominees once again. We need a motion to approve tonight's agenda.
I'll take that motion. This is Tom.
Who was that? We
Tom.
Met.
Tom, it's
Tom.
You all.
Okay. Yep. All right. And we need a second, please.
Second, Kevin.
And any additions to tonight's agenda, corrections? If not, is anyone opposed to the approval of the agenda? Any abstentions? The agenda is approved. I did not get the May minutes to anyone, so if we could have a motion to table.
I still move, Kevin.
Okay. And a second to table?
I'll second. Huh?
Okay. Anyone opposed to tabling the May 16th minutes? Any abstentions? All righty. The approval of the minutes from May will be tabled until next month. Does anyone have any comments about us doing the motions this evening first and then coming back to the reports?
I'd be curious as to why we plan on doing that, but I'm not opposed to it.
Tom, this is Kevin. I have to leave at precisely like 8:20 this evening. And so just so that we have enough for full votes, I suggested that.
Sounds great.
Okay, so is there anyone opposed to moving to motions for consideration? Okay, hearing none, we'll go ahead and move on to that. If there are motions that need to be discussed further in a report-type setting, we can come back to them. So under item 5, motions for consideration, first motion is to approve a policy that prior to each board meeting, the bookkeeper and or treasurer will provide the board with an accounting of all payments made in the previous month and all payments to be made in the upcoming month to be presented for board approval. Unforeseen or ad hoc expenses can be managed during the month via majority vote on the mailing list. On a one-time basis, the board will receive an accounting of all payments made year-to-date. Dave, did you want to make this motion?
Sure, I'll make that motion.
And do we have a second?
I'll second that motion.
I'll give it to Richard. Hi, Richard.
There you go. Hey, how you doing, man?
Hey.
And discussion?
Just a quick thought that it says bookkeeper and or treasurer, and I know that sometimes the treasurer...
Who is speaking, please?
This is Kevin. My discussion is that sometimes the treasurer will be in the volunteer position slot. For example, if the treasurer is a board member or otherwise a volunteer, I think it's easy to require a bookkeeper who's on our payroll to do so, but that if it's the treasurer who might be a volunteer position, that such a requirement might be more of a challenge. I'm still in favor of the motion. I just thought that was a worthy discussion point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. The same thought came to me. This is Tom, by the way. Saying and or, just in the worded verbiage, it would make sense to have somebody whose primary duty it is, but then somebody as a backup who would be the next person in line to fulfill the duty should the primary person not be able to do it. And since Holly's on the payroll right now, it makes sense to me that she would be the one of whom that would be required.
I think that's the perfect sense.
Yeah, and it does make perfect sense. And I don't know if any of you had a chance to check your email within the last 15 minutes or so. But I actually went through and did a PDF file of our Bank of America payouts for June and what is already listed there for July and scheduled to be paid, and also did a list of the FEST payouts as much as I could do within like a half hour's time. Just so you guys can see that actually the way the Bank of America runs the payouts, it's not going to be that difficult to do. It's at FEST time that things become a lot more complicated.
Yeah, so I did see that, and thank you. The other thing that I noticed about it is, I mean, part of this, I think, is to kind of help us get more involved and aware of what's going on around us. So, like, if I look at this, it's a good start, but I'm like, okay, we gave Scotty Meltzer $50, but I don't know why we gave Scotty Meltzer $50. I don't know if there's any other comment or anything we could use to help clarify why we're making the payments.
Well, this was just a very, very quick thing for
and
me to do. Like Grace Koo, I wanted to put a note next to her that she was the winner of the World Juggling Day T-shirt design.
Right.
You know, some of these are for contests. Others are... Go ahead, Tom.
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, I believe that the ledger that was, or like the template for a ledger that was given to us, I believe that has space for notes. So if we wind up using a formal template like that, that would clear up that issue.
Yeah,
well,
and I think Holly said she can generate these from QuickBooks. I don't know if her QuickBooks generated one would have a comment, but if so, that would be beautiful.
Yeah.
Also on Bank of America's site itself, when the payment is scheduled, there is a place where we can put a note in there as well that would show up on this list then.
Okay, great.
Yep. Yeah, so as the one who threw this out there, my guess is that the way it is worded isn't complete or perfect, but I think the underlying goal is a good one, and I wanted to make sure we discussed it. So.
Sure.
I think it'd be great if we had some more visibility in what was going on, if for our own education, nothing else. But I also don't want it to end up being some process that gets in the way of getting business done, particularly around the festival. So
right.
I don't know, like, for example, it can't be that we get to the festival and the treasurer has to write somebody a check, but they can't do it until the board all checks their email and four people approve. So I don't know how we want to tweak this to account for cases like that.
Right.
Well, and as I said in my email back to you, Dave, the FEST budget is already approved.
Right.
All of the payments dealing with the FEST, including the payouts that I listed for championships and fund and things like that, are all part of that FEST budget.
Right, so that helps with a lot of things. I'm going to guess, you might know better than me, that even still there will be times that will crop up at the fest when we need to write somebody a check that was not necessarily in the fest budget.
Right.
Is that wrong?
Usually it comes out that if we owe for hotel rooms, and that actually should have been part of the contingency within that contingency line within the budget. It's very rare that we end up having to pay out a whole lot that wasn't anticipated in some way, shape, or form.
Right. So the other kind of straw man I threw out in email, it might have been just to you, I can't even remember because there was a lot of email flew around today,
right,
was I could throw out some idea, like if it's sent out an email and we don't have a majority one way or the other within 24 hours, then the chair can just decide at their discretion. Do we think that would cover weird cases, or other times we can't even wait 24 hours?
I don't see where that would be a problem.
And that seems pretty flexible. I think it means that we take a look at everything, but nothing gets too gummed up.
Yeah.
Right. Because actually the only time we're paying things immediately is when it comes at fest time.
Right.
Everything else is through a check system through Bank of America. So it takes about a week to 10 days before those checks even really get in the hands of the person. It's not immediate. So, yeah, I'd be fine with that if you'd like to amend your motion.
Yeah, I think that's great. I think where we're heading to now is nice, because anything we know ahead of time, the board should have all seen before, you know, before it was even scheduled and approved it. Anything that's in the FEST budget is approved ahead of time because we approve the FEST budget. And then when something weird crops up, worst case, we should be able to pay it. We should be able to agree to pay it within a day.
Okay.
And since the payment is going to take a week to clear anyway, that doesn't seem tragic.
Kim, this is Sandy. In festivals past, hasn't it been such that there have been situations where cash was actually taken out of the tiller and like a note put in saying X amount of money paid towards, I don't know what it was, like if the DJ, if there was a DJ and he wanted to stay an extra hour and we needed to pay him immediately or something like that. But this type of system seems as though that would it would correct that. But cash is sometimes taken out, isn't it?
Yeah, the past few years, what we've done is if the person needed cash, Ellie has had us write out the check. They then sign the check right back over to us, and then it is paid out in cash. But this way we have a paper trail that was paid out.
Right.
Okay. Well, bringing it back to the motion, it sounds like we want to do it but amend it. Is that correct?
Right.
So, Dave, is there a sentence you'd like to add to the end of this stating that 24-hour?
Yeah. So let's see. Majority vote on the mailing list. After that sentence, we could say if a board majority hasn't been obtained within 24 hours. I'm giving somebody a chance to write this down. I don't know whether that's Sandy or Kim. So let me
know. All right. I got it. Right after mailing list, if a board majority is not obtained within 24 hours?
The chair can, at their discretion, approve payment.
This is Martin. Does that mean the chair can overrule a majority? Make sure that's clear.
We should make that clear. That certainly wasn't the intent.
Right.
I think the way I worded it, that wouldn't be the case, because it says the chair can only do that if a majority wasn't reached. But, yeah, we should make sure that's clear, because that certainly wasn't the intent.
Could you read it one more time? Can you just say it one more time for me?
Yeah, we'll see if I say it the same way this time. if a board majority hasn't been reached within 24 hours, the chair can choose to approve payment at their discretion. At his or her discretion.
And perhaps, just so we're very clear, as Martin pointed out, just one additional sentence after that, the chair cannot override board majority.
Yeah, I don't see any harm in explicitly stating that.
Okay.
And I don't think this means amendment. The last sentence that I had in there was really just to kind of help us get caught up on what has been going on. So.
Right. Are you okay there, Sandy?
I think so, yep.
Okay. Do we have any further discussion? If not, we'll go to a vote. Anyone opposed to this motion? Any abstentions? The motion passes. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you.
Item B is motion to approve either on-demand or fulfillment contract for the 2011 FEST DVDs through AccuTrack. I did attach both PDF files to the board plus email. So is there someone that would like to make this motion?
I'll make that motion, Kevin A.
And a second?
I'll second it, Dave.
Okay. And discussion. I'll start off discussion because I've been in touch with the company. On-demand simply means as a person orders their DVD set from our store, they replicate it, they put everything in it together, and they ship it out. Fulfillment, on the other hand, is where we tell them, you know, replicate 300 DVD sets, They store it in their facility at a cost of $30 per month for as long as our items are there, and the company still ships it out. So this is no muss, no fuss for us. I just didn't want to be the sole person to make a decision on which way we went.
My gut reaction is that we don't want to do fulfillment because we don't know how many copies we're going to sell. If we do on-demand, then just get some numbers sent out to our store so we can fulfill them as needed or send them out as raffle prizes or whatever.
We can order as many DVD sets as we want to keep on hand ourselves at the wholesale.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, fulfillment would mean that we have to sell one or two DVDs every month in order to, you know, not lose money on them.
Right.
By the storage fee. So I personally would go with on-demand. But I also need to make a decision tonight. So.
Yeah, this is Dave. I definitely would go with on-demand as well. I don't know if I'm convinced in the long run this is what we're going to want to do because I think we're going to want a download model, but I do think we need to do something about 2011 now, and I think the on-demand is fine.
I have looked at download models, and I haven't found one that would really work for the length of our DVD. That's the problem at this point.
I mean, that's something that we can research further in the future, I guess, but for this year, I guess given the scope of this discussion, I think that the on-demand is what we want.
Yeah.
Okay. So does everyone feel okay voting on this tonight so that we can get this done and start production?
Ready. Okay. Out of curiosity, do you know if these are pressed or burned? I think this question was brought up somewhere in an email, but I never saw a response.
Yeah, these are pressed. They are not – what do you call it? Martin is the one that had the good question. Martin, what's it called when they're not burned?
Press.
Press.
I don't know of anybody that presses one DVD. I think that's not feasible.
Well, I did ask on the phone the other day.
So, I mean, do they press a bunch and hold on to them, unbeknownst, as it were, to us? I don't know.
Yeah. I guess either way, the bottom line's the same for us.
Yeah. I mean, in this day and age, probably burned ones are not so bad. You know, 10 years ago, many people couldn't play them. And some older DVDs won't, DVD players won't be able to play them. But I don't know if it matters a lot.
All right. Well, if there's no further discussion, we'll move on to vote. Is anyone opposed? First of all, we'd have to amend the motion to read to approve on-demand contract for 2011 Fest DVD.
I would make that amendment. This is Tom.
Okay. And someone to second that amended motion?
Second, Kevin. Or Matt.
Okay.
Who was that, Matt?
Yes, it was.
Okay. And who made the motion to amend?
This is Tom.
Tom. And we'll go to vote. Anyone opposed? Any abstentions? The motion passes. Item C is, and I put this on as protocol, motion to approve the resignation of John Nickel as IJA treasurer with the board's thanks for his time and energy, and to approve blank as treasurer for festival purposes. Can we have a motion to at least discuss this?
Yeah, I'll make that motion. Dave.
Okay, and a second, please.
Kevin.
Second. Okay. All right, I believe the first part of this is not a problem. We do need to appoint someone as official treasurer for the fest purposes because the treasurer usually makes sure that the register balances out at the end of the day and that money gets to the lockbox. And the numbers are all sent to Holly so that she can put them in the bookkeeping.
Have we asked Kevin McBeth?
I have not. I know Dave copied him on the one email that we were going back and forth on today.
Yeah, I didn't strictly ask him, but he certainly knows we have the problem, and he didn't say, I'll do that.
Right.
I don't think he's excited about it, certainly.
Who are we talking about?
Kevin Macbeth.
The previous
Kevin race. Who?
Macbeth.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Well, if we don't have any, I mean, even if we are generating ideas of who it is now, it sounds like the motion should just be amended to accept the resignation, and then we need to put our energy to finding one. But even if we pick a good candidate now, there's no way to get direct approval or confirmation from that person. Is that correct?
Somebody who's on the phone.
I would actually, Scott Krause, I was wondering, what are the duties of the treasurer at the festival?
Duties at the festival are to basically oversee the running of the cash register. So you do spend a fair amount of time at the registration table. However, we do have a woman from the Visitors Bureau that will be giving us 4 hours of time each day of the fest. So that helps to alleviate some things. And there are several others that are trained on the cash register. The biggest responsibility for the person in this position is to make sure that the money is counted out properly at the end of the day, that the money matches the cash register tape, and as I said, that money gets safely deposited into the safe deposit box, the drop box that we get through the Convention Bureau.
I want to comment that, to my knowledge, this has never been a board-approved position. It has been done sort of ad hoc at every festival, sometimes perhaps by the treasurer, but almost always never. I mean, almost never has it been done actually by the treasurer. It's usually been done by someone, you know, basically working at the registration table. If that person happened to be the treasurer, that was, you know, that was the treasurer.
Kevin was just being a good guy in Rochester.
Well, I mean, if he was the treasurer at the time, and he probably was, then, you know, he was there, and that's the sort of thing he might take on. Mike Sullivan has done it. I don't think he's ever been the treasurer. When he was running the fest or running the registration cash register. I don't remember what all this motion included in as part of this task, but I've helped with the cash register and stuff like that. I've never made deposits. Kim, you made deposits. I don't know if you were the treasurer at the time. So it's
in
just
Lexington,
sort of
I was. Yeah.
Okay. So I don't know that needs to be the treasurer who does this, is my point.
Okay. Because I know Holly did it the first Winston-Salem. I believe it was the first Winston-Salem. And then it's been Kevin Macbeth. And I did it when I was treasurer the 1 year. It seems like for the last few years, whoever was treasurer filled in it, you know, to make sure the money got where it needed to be. But if we just want to get rid of that second part and figure out who the go-to person is going to be, that's fine.
I should add, Jim, that one of the big responsibilities is that person has to have the IGA checkbook and authority to write checks and make payouts.
That won't get done in time right now. Holly and I are the only two besides Kevin Macbeth that have signing privileges. It never got turned over to John Nickel, and it takes a couple weeks. I can check with the bank to see if we can get somebody thrown on there.
Okay, but as it stands now, that would be you then.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in the discussion today, it sounded like we resigned to you, Kim, being the person that had to write checks, but there was a particular dilemma because by the bylaws, you are explicitly not supposed to be the person who's balancing out the cash register, correct?
I cannot fill what is considered to be treasurer, which is balancing out the money.
Right.
Well, she can't be the treasurer. It doesn't mean she can't be the person balancing the cash register. Balancing the cash register is not written in the bylaws as part of the treasurer's job.
I guess we've just figured out that there's plenty of precedent for that not being the treasurer, so.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't mind doing it as long as somebody else is there with me.
Kim, I'll be there.
The check anyway.
I mean, Kim, it's probably going to have to be you and me because I'm going to be the one coming to you saying we need to pay this person. We need to pay this. We need to give this guy his money. We need to get paid this farmer. We need the honorarium cash for our VIP.
Right.
Who's that? Who was that speaking?
That was Matt. That was Matt.
Okay.
Well, then I would suggest an amendment to this, that we just accept the first part of this motion. Get rid of the "and to approve whoever for as treasurer," and we'll just work with what we have here.
That seems reasonable. If there's plenty of precedent for this not being a board approved role in the first place, then
that's fine.
That seems fine.
Okay.
I mean, I don't really like the first part very much either, but I don't see that we have a whole lot of choice.
I don't either.
I don't think we can refuse to let him resign. So.
All righty. So who originally made the motion?
Dave.
Do we have a... Okay. Dave,
seconded it, but...
Okay. Someone to approve the amended motion.
I move to amend.
Okay.
Kevin?
Second to amend.
I'll second that, Dave.
Okay, any further discussion? If not, anyone opposed to approval of the resignation of John with the board's thanks for his time and energy? Any abstentions? Motion passes. Item D. Richard, I put this on here because you gave me two names. It's not a formal thing, but the board is usually approved the names. But you didn't tell me who was getting what, so do you want the board to approve the nominations for your awards? Is Richard still here? Uh-oh.
I'm still here. I had the mute on.
Oh.
I'm here.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's how we're supposed to do it. I was going to say
motion to approve award recipients for 2012. Someone to make the motion and then second so we can put the names in, please.
Matt, I motion.
Second?
I'll second, Kevin.
Okay. And Richard,
who are our
award winners?
Matt and I have already had communication about this. Jayco is the only person we're nominating for IJA service.
Okay.
Yes.
For what award?
Extraordinary Service.
To the IJA, yes.
The Extraordinary Service Award?
Yep.
That's correct.
Richard, what about historical achievement?
Well, Matt, we recommended Freddie, but then you sent me an email that appeared that you didn't really want to do that.
Say what? Wait a minute. Back on.
I sent you an email. Here's our two recommendations. It's Jayco and Freddie Keaton.
Right. And I just wrote you back today and asked the question about you had Joko as the spelling of Jayco. So I wanted to confirm that was it. That's the only thing I wrote you about this.
No, I'm sorry. Well, that was my computer choosing weird words.
Yeah, I never said anything about Freddie Ken, brother. I know this because the only email I wrote you was today, which I felt bad about because you wrote me about 3 or 4 weeks ago.
Yeah, and that email had both of them on there, is what I'm saying.
Okay.
So
I think
he's worthy of the award.
Mr. Kenton.
So Jayco for the Extraordinary Service Award and Freddie who?
Kenton.
Kenton. For historical.
Did somebody spell her last name for me?
Yeah, sure. It's Kenton.
And the Education Committee also sent me their award nominee. And I just got the okay to announce this literally just now. Richard Kennison is the Education Award recipient.
Wow. Wow.
Surprise.
Wow. I humbly, well, we got to vote on me. I'm sorry. Never mind. No, we don't. They don't require a vote for them, do they?
No, they don't. They technically don't.
Yeah.
No, it's the previous award winners, kind of shepherded by Dave Finnegan. I just talked to him today.
Yep. So congratulations.
Well, thank you very much. I'm humbled beyond belief. I've been working with Hubby Burgess all month, and he has that award too. So that's very exciting.
Okay, so do we have any further discussion of the award recipients for 2012?
Yes, this is Sandy.
Yep.
There was. I sent an email to the board, and was that taken care of?
Oh, I did send it on to everyone. Do we want to discuss that now?
Yes, please. I sent it out a week ago.
Yeah, and I did pass it on because I did hear from Aaron on that.
Do we
I'll
want
make that,
mo-
I'll make that motion. Hey, Sandy?
Yeah.
We're still in a motion. You got to move to amend.
Okay. There's too many people
we want to add.
I can't understand what's happening.
Wait.
This is Richard. We want to add to the motion. We just want to say Martin Dugan, honorary life member.
Martin who?
I'm sorry, Martin Frost. I don't know who Martin Dugan's a local celebrity in my St. Louis area. I'm sorry. Martin Frost, who I meant to say. That's hilarious.
Okay.
Who?
Martin Frost is who we're talking about.
He's already a life member.
An honorary. Sandy, explain what we want to do.
Honorary life member.
We understand Martin is already a life member, but we want to honor him. Sandy wanted to nominate him as an honor in this way.
That's right. It's an award that hasn't been, relegated to anybody in probably, 6 or 7 years, and I think that's the way it should be. This isn't something that we want to have done every year. And so everybody got my. I sent this to board to the board, so everybody has the rationale behind that.
Sandy, who are the previous winners? If you can remember, you got any other names just to throw out there?
I think Bill Gittes.
Okay, I've never.
Yeah, that's all I can think of. I'm not at my computer right now.
I'm looking it up.
I'm sure Art's a life honorary life member, isn't he?
Art Jennings?
Chairman Emeritus.
Okay.
Honorary life members, it doesn't give dates.
Open it up. Check for unbring.
George Farvin, Eva Crosby, Bernard Joyce, Bill Dietrich, Stu Reynolds,
yeah.
Mary Wilkins, Eddie Johnson, William Brown, Art Jennings, Roger Montadon, Bobby May, Roger Dollarhide, Phineas Indrit, and Betty Willer.
Oh, Martin, you're in good company, brother.
You're in great company, brother, that's right.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
Okay, it sounds like we – go ahead.
I was going to say, is there any more discussion? If not, we'll go to vote. Anyone opposed to the award recipients for 2012? Any abstentions? We have our award winners. Congratulations, Martin and Richard.
Yeah.
And Richard, I'll contact you about the plaques for Jay and for Freddie.
Okay. And Matt, do you want me to do the write-up on Freddie? You know, the...
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes, please.
Okay.
Okay. Item E, motion to approve the allocation of a dedicated LREC ad unit on the eJuggle front page to be used for compensatory advertising in the vendor discount program. And there is an explanation there. Dave, you made this motion, so would you like to formally make the motion?
I would love to. I will make this motion.
And someone to second, please.
I'll second Richard.
It's like dueling seconds. I love it. Okay, and discussion.
Great idea. I think this will be a learn-as-we-go type thing, but I think it's a great idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm excited. I think the downside is just very, very low to the point of being almost non-existent.
Yeah, I agree. I think you're doing a great job working on this, Dave. So
yeah.
Appreciate your time.
Nice work.
I know.
So this would be just a question here. This is the same idea as AdSense, but not that we're getting money for every click, correct?
Right. I mean, we have ad inventory we could use for whatever we want. And one thing we could do is sell it to people. And in this case, we're basically trading it for discounts for our members.
Excellent. Okay. Any further discussion? I'm sorry, Dave, was there more?
I was going to say it's interesting that this comes up when it does, because I've actually been in discussions with kind of 1.5 people recently about also kind of directly selling ad space, because people approached us saying, I would like to put ads on eJuggle. Can I give you money and do that? So if those discussions were further along, I probably would have had motions related to that tonight, but they haven't gotten there yet.
Cool. Great.
Any further discussion? If not, we'll go to vote. Anyone opposed? Any abstentions? Motion is approved. Nice work, Dave.
Thank you.
Item F also came from Dave. Motion to approve the following changes to membership costs. Lower adult membership from $40 to $29.99. Lower youth membership from $31 to $24.99. Lower life membership from $1,500 to $1,250. Someone to make the motion. Dave, would you like that honor?
I will make that motion.
Second, please.
A second. This is Tom.
Okay. And discussion.
This is Kevin. I'm leaning toward abstaining for the reason that while I recognize it's a push to try to get more members, I don't think that price is our problem. And as we continue to see a decline in membership until the new solution is found, I think it's not necessarily a good idea. We've been having our biggest troubles have been budgetary. I don't think we're losing people because of the money. And so that's my thought.
I agree with you, Kevin, and I couldn't have said it better. I also had one question for Dave. Why the $24.99 and $29.99 instead of just $30
and
$25? So can I address both of those questions, Dave? Sorry, you can address them as well. But first I'd like to say if you take an economics 1 ever in a classroom, we are certainly losing people because of the price. If you bring the price down to 10 cents, we'll have a lot more people. And the question is, at what point do you put the price? So any reduction in the price is going to encourage more people to join or to stay. And I definitely think that because we've eliminated Juggle Magazine, we've eliminated a big cost and a big draw for people to join. eJuggle is great, but We can reduce our cost, I think. I mean, we have reduced our cost, and therefore, because of that, we can reduce our price. Now, myself, I'm not fond of the .99 part. I like the idea of $29 or $29.50 or something like that. $29.99, by the way, is one penny less than we used to charge just a few years ago, which seems like a funny thing to go back to. And at that time, we had Juggle Magazine as a benefit. So I would like to see at least, a little different from $29.99, which is so conspicuous that, anyway, so almost embarrassing.
Yeah.
To me. Now, you guys may have a different opinion. And, $29.99 will sell more memberships than $30, maybe only two. I mean, I don't know how many. Maybe one. But so that's it, public relations is part of that. And as much as I hate to say that, as a IGA board member and IGA volunteer, I've seen that, we've needed to be aware of marketing issues. Now, so I think that answers both of the questions of why, you know, why do we want to lower it, and why do we want those particular numbers? I as I say, I don't like those exact numbers, but I think something that looks good is better for attracting new members. Dave, do you want to add something to that?
Yeah, sure. So I would say anecdotally, just in speaking to lots of people, I would say we are losing people because of cost. And part of it is because that's too much money, and part of it is the PR thing of you took something away and you left the price the same. So simply moving the price down addresses that, and it doesn't feel so much like we're just thumbing our nose at people and saying we took something away and you lose. So I really do think lowering the price makes a difference, particularly in concert with other things we're talking about doing, like the vendor discount program and potentially doing stuff with the Fest video in the future or whatever else. So I do think the price matters. The $29.99, you can mostly blame Ms. Stevens for that, who's not here to defend herself. I had originally written that up as $30, and at the Boulder Fest this weekend, I believe it was Aaron and Warren Hammond that were both, I mean, basically they were quoting all the same studies, which are why every store in the world sells things for something $99 instead of for a round number of dollars, saying that, I mean, to this day, it puzzles me that this actually does work and that people have a different impression, but there are studies that say if you price it $29.99, people will react more favorably than if you price it at $30. So that's where that came from. I had initially said $30, and they talked me out of it based on that. The historical significance of $30, I guess I see that point. I don't know that. I mean, I don't think we can move it down much because already, I mean, Kevin makes the point that we are taking kind of a calculated risk by lowering the cost down into this range. Mm-hmm. Because if it doesn't attract more people, then our budget will not balance next year. We will lose money. So I'm nervous about moving it down any more than that. I think Tom and Martin both originally said, 25 would sound better. And I'm like, it would. I would love to be able to say 25. I'm just nervous about the additional increased income if we do that.
Yeah, I think that 25, this is Tom. I think the 25.
Hey, guys, I have to interrupt really quick. This is Kevin. I have to be stepping out for my gig now. And as for this last issue, I'm going to abstain on the vote. I apologize for having to leave. I have to depart. Take care.
Bye, Kevin.
Thanks, have a
Kevin.
Good night.
Break a leg, Kevin.
I'd like to say that I don't think anything below 29 is necessary. I mean, I don't think we should try to go below 29 unless you really think that we don't need the money. But the difference between 29 and 30 is $1, and the number of members paying that each year is about 850 or 900. So we're talking about $900 loss if we lower it to 29, or half that if we lower it to 29.50. That's just technical details.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, I'll plead the fifth on the historical significance because, I mean, most of you know that sort of drifts us back into the time when I was absent. So will have a better feel than me for the significance of that number.
Personally, I don't think it's incredibly significant, especially when you consider, you know, back when we were charging that, we were taking a pretty considerable loss on it. So at that time, the argument could be made that we should have been charging more anyway. I mean, we certainly had raised the costs at one point. So I think that argument is, I wouldn't say it's invalid, but I think it's a small one. I would like us to see it, or I would like us to reduce it further, but I think that would only be possible, you know, if there were a cut in, I guess, in staff expenses, you know, like in bookkeeper expenses or something. And I know that those discussions are being made. I don't know how seriously they're being talked about right now. But I would like to see it go down further in the future. I think, too, that we want to stick with a round number, to be honest. And that's in part because, I don't know, the argument can be made for sure that, you know, we're selling a product, but at the same time, I don't think that necessarily works with what at least we envision the IJ being. If that makes sense, am I being clear at all? you know, we are selling, you know, subscriptions to eJuggle and all of these other things. You know, access to the vendor discount program and things. But we're also, you know, this money is also going towards supporting programs that the IJ runs for free or cheap, you know, like YEP, and the video tutorial covers all the overhead for that. And I don't like the idea of that being a product so much as a program that creates public value. And I know we already have a reputation of just being the festival and just being whatever publication we're making at the time. And I think the .99 philosophically contributes to that in a negative way.
And bring a lot of pennies to the festival if we're going to charge
.99. Yeah.
Great point. Hey, this is Richard, and this is just my opinion. I'm going to vote for the price reduction, but I don't think it will. I hope I'm wrong. I don't think it will increase membership in any significant way, but I'm going to vote for the price reduction.
I have a question. Just a question to throw out there, and I don't know if anyone even knows the answer to this. Have we gained any members since eJuggle came out because of eJuggle?
Hard to know.
That's almost unknowable.
It is unknowable. We have been, this is Marilyn, we have received quite a few memberships from people that have been gone a long time. Whether it's eJuggle or not, I don't know. But we've been hearing from some really old people.
People that have been left for a long time is what Marilyn's trying to say.
Yeah.
Right.
The comment I would make would be on the life membership price reduction. I don't think someone is going to decide or not decide to become a life member because they can save $250 now. I think if someone is serious about juggling and it's a big part of their life and they want to become a life member of the IJA, I don't think it's $1,500 being the difference between $1,250 for them to become a life member.
Actually, I disagree with that.
I disagree with that too, Martin. I think the same argument you're making is it's a price reduction and people are going to be more attracted to spending $1,200 than $1,500.
Exactly. Just the same as if you made it $999 instead of $1,000, there would be a few people, you know, one person maybe, who might join it, $999 instead of $1,000. So I think it's a substantial comment to say, you know, we do want your life memberships. We got one new life membership recently at the $1,500 rate. We don't get many of those. We get, you know, one a year at most.
I mean, it's probably a minor point just because it seems like at this point so few people buy it anyway. But
right. But each one of those so few people is a pretty high fixed cost.
But it makes a statement that we're not really, you know, trying to make a reasonable price there. We came up with that $1,500 price in advisory, and it was largely because of Juggle Magazine.
Mm-hmm. Which that $1,500 really didn't cover the cost anyway for the life members.
Right.
It certainly covered the cost of Juggle Magazine.
I thought that was one of our long discussions, but that's not part of this necessarily anyway. Do we have more discussion on this yet?
I mean, it seemed like one of the main things was the 99-cent thing, and this will not be a tough sell with me. That's not the important part of this to me. I allowed Aaron and Warren to sway me down a penny. If people on the whole, if the consensus is we'd rather have it be a round number, that's fine with me.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think that if we're going to, if one of the reasons why we would have it in the $29 range anyway would be just so we can have it close to 30 but not quite 30, then I'd just call it 29 even. And then, you know, when we have it all listed in the store and everything, we can always add the option of, you know, if you want to pay more, put in a donation. You can earmark it however you'd like. Something like that. I think 29 would be an easier sell than 30, talking about even numbers. I just don't like having it priced in a way that shouts product, personally.
And Martin did have a good point that, you know, anybody who signs up for a membership at the Fest, we will need pennies.
Yeah.
It's a good catch, yeah.
So I would be happy to vote for a reduction, but I would like to see it amended to 29 even, is what I'm saying.
As the person who wrote it originally, I could cross my fingers and go with 29 even. Below that, I'd probably start to cringe a little bit, but...
Yeah. I'm cringing a little as I say this, by the way. but I do think that we need to make some kind of drastic measure, and that this is a step in what I hope is the right direction. I think that when we make the announcement, we need to go about this in a very loud and very cohesive way.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
This is Marilyn. I just want to say my ground that I'm opposed to this move. I don't think it's going to improve things at all. I think that I do miss Juggle myself, but I think eJuggle has great potential, and I think members will see that, and that will attract people. And I'm also a little worried that the AMS system coming up is going to cost us some money, whereas I work for free. That's not going to be free, and I'm not sure that's been considered.
I didn't understand that last thing you said. Can you say that again?
The AMS system, I know it's going to have a cost associated with it, whereas I do not. And I'm just not sure that that's been considered as far as your budgetary needs with this new plan.
I think the idea behind the reduction is that we're going to increase, or fingers crossed, hopefully increase our membership beyond, I guess, where the other stuff would scale, where our expenses would scale, especially when you consider how we're growing a lot of traction in Central and South America. $40 is an awful lot of money. $29 still is a substantial amount of money, but it's closer to what might be an impulse buy for a lot of people more international than the U.S.
Yeah, I mean, the other interesting thing is that the way we sit right now, I think all of our expenses do not scale upward with the number of members. Like, a new member doesn't actually cost us much of anything.
Yeah, it's bandwidth.
So it's sort of like the better this works, the more we could conceivably lower the price if we were so inclined. If all of a sudden we had 5,000 members and we still had $28,000 a year in expenses, we would have more money than we knew what to do with. Now, I don't think that's exactly going to happen, but the point being that, you know, if it works and we start bringing in members, then that's actually really, really good because our expenses don't go up, whereas they did with Juggle.
Right.
Oh, no, just my personal opinion is, don't get me wrong, I would love to lower the price. However, I don't think we're in financially stable an area yet to do that. If I knew that we were, you know, on solid ground and everything is honky-dory and we're not even close to just a break-even year, I'd be fine. But this makes me really, really nervous.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think you're not alone and that it's making us nervous. I guess all I have to say about that, or, you know, one of many things I have to say about that, is that we haven't really changed a lot of the way that we're operating right now, or recently, and we've seen things continue to go in decline, and I think we're in a place where we need to make some kind of a drastic decision and see if something changes, because obviously what we're doing now is not working any better than just kind of breaking even or losing a little bit of money every year.
Yeah. I think we have a pretty good sample right now that says that if we stay the course, we will lose money.
Yeah.
Because we are going to continue to bleed members.
Right. And I'm not saying we should stay the course. It's just we're still going to get that question, what am I getting for my $29?
Right.
You know, so that's what we have to work on selling is what we have and what we're offering and what programs we have in place. The magic pill is not just lowering the price.
Sure.
No, but
sure, that's
but
why I'm doing other things too.
But the price is a definitely part of the decision that people make. And the thing is that if you don't lower the price, we're definitely going to lose more members. And if you do lower the price, hopefully that will stem the tide. Whether it will stop the tide or whether it will bring in even more members, you know, gain more members than we would have had, who can say? And we may never know. unless, you know, suddenly next month we have, as he says, 5,000 members, but that's not going to happen. So we have to do something, and I think this is a respectable thing to do, and it's almost necessary at this point.
Right, I agree.
Okay, I know when we changed the membership prices before, when we raised them years ago, the question came up as to the best way to do it. Was it going to be immediate? Was there going to be a target date? I know it's different when you're going up than when you're bringing it back down.
Right.
But do we need to consider that at all?
I would say we should either do it for after the festival or at the beginning of the new year. I'm leaning towards after the festival. That would give us some time to get some materials together, general IJ advertising stuff, and also stuff that's more specific to the reduction of the cost. Yeah, just so we can get the word out better. And I would be happy to work with somebody, presumably Aaron, on working on some of this stuff, and Dave, too, if Dave is excited to work with me on more stuff.
I would say raise. I mean, lower the price on August 1st. You know, pick some date such as that, or
yeah.
Day after the festival if you want. It's not much different.
Yeah, I mean, August 1st would probably be easier in
really
terms of back end stuff.
Yeah, this was also kind of in line with my thinking. I mean, no matter when you raise it, whenever you lower it, somebody isn't going to like the date you picked. But I think we have just very practical reasons for not lowered it now, when we know
right.
we get a bunch of registrations around the festival. So
yeah.
I think if we announce at the festival that we're doing it, and after the festival, whether it is the day after the festival or August 1st or something like that, if it actually
right.
takes place then, I think that's defensible as, yes, the decision was made to do it at the fest.
Yeah. Martin had also talked about being able to prorate recent purchases out a little ways.
Of multiple years.
Well, yeah, okay, multiple years. For people that I guess have recently purchased multiple years.
Not just current members, but only those members with more than 12 months left.
Okay.
If we can do that accounting-wise, that probably makes sense.
Yeah, I would agree with that, and that would be a good way to counter some potential PR crisis.
Yep.
Good.
Yeah,
I think that's
forgotten we let people do that, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have a number of people who have like 5 years of, you know, advanced membership, and if suddenly we've lowered the price, they'll think,
yeah.
Oh, I thought I was saving money, and now I've wasted it. So I think that'll
right.
make them happy.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah.
There aren't that many, but there are a number. That would be unhappy.
Yep, and yeah, they would justifiably be irritated. So.
Okay.
So could you amend the motion to take that into account and say
yep.
that the amount of money that they have paid in years beyond their current membership years will be reallocated and to extend their membership proportionately at the new, using the new rate versus the old rate. And that would apply to youth members who would, you know, their rate would apply, whatever changes there as well.
Yeah.
Can we put that into a one-sentence thing? I mean, you want that change into the motion, Martin?
Yeah, it needs to be in the motion.
Okay, so members who have purchased multiple-year memberships will be...
No. It needs to be members, current members... who have more current non-life members who have more than 1 year remaining on their membership will have their membership extended. You want to write this down? I'm just dictating. Here we go.
I am now. Yeah, I'm writing it
okay.
now.
Current
non-life members who have more than
1 year left on their current paid membership will have that membership extended by effectively lowering the prepaid membership rate. The new rate.
Yeah, and that should probably specify at the time of the price reduction, too, not at the time of the vote, assuming that there's a difference.
Yeah,
obviously this all takes place at the time, at some given time, August 1st or whatever.
Yeah.
And we could probably put that, we should probably pick a date to at least vote on and put that in the motion.
Right.
If we say August 1st, is there any concern with, like, getting the store updated by that date?
No.
Yeah, I would have some concern about being able to get some nice looking materials in place by then. I am performing a lot and I'm still in school too, but I can certainly budget time to make that happen.
What materials are you talking about? What printed materials do we have now that have the price on it?
Well, no. Like, get materials together, like online stuff, you know, like graphics and things that advertise this and would also help highlight what the money actually goes to. You know, well, it goes to this program, that program, the other program. You know, basic IJA promotional materials that also highlight the reduction in cost.
Well, that's fine, but I don't think we have to, you know, advertise it on August 5th. If we're not done with, not ready with advertising the PR part of it, as it were, till August 5th or whatever, I don't think that matters. You know, that'll happen when there's time, but it's not going to be more than, you know, a little bit of time separating the two.
Right. Yeah.
That's probably
true. Okay, well, I'm saying that I'm fine with it, but I can see myself taking on a lot of the design aspects of this.
Who's this?
This is Tom.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yeah.
Just wanted to double check.
Yeah, sure.
I can handle the store updates. That's very easy.
Beautiful. Okay. Yeah, and
for purposes of amending the motion so we can actually vote on it, we want to say August 1st?
Yeah, that sounds great to me. This is Tom.
It sounds like there's more people that would like to round off the number to $29 than $29.99. Yeah,
I agree. I think the $99 is tacky.
Okay, what do we want to do with the junior's price, which was also at a $99?
Cut off
$99.
Do you
want to put up or down?
I'd move it down. So that's with me. I'm just one guy.
What was the junior?
$24 even. I didn't catch that. $24 even.
Correct.
That's what I would say.
Okay. Any further discussion then? We need a motion for the amendment.
I'll make that motion.
Okay, so motion for the amended motion and a second for the amendment.
I'll second the amended. This is Tom.
Okay, any further discussion?
Okay, well, I got to go right now, but thank you.
All right, we'll go to vote. Anyone opposed? I am going to oppose. See, this is him. Any abstentions?
Yeah, what did you
passes.
Say?
Oh, Kevin. Abstained.
I'm sorry, what was that?
Didn't Kevin
abstain? Kevin abstained. I'm sorry, yes.
And Kim, did you oppose? I couldn't understand what you said.
I opposed, yes.
Okay.
Okay. Motion passes. All right, we'll go back into reports now. Matt, you still here?
I am here, of course.
Okay, excellent. So I included the registration report from Mike and the workshop information that Dave sent in an email, and it's all yours.
Okay. So I don't know if you heard, I think it came up last time, but Fair Simona will not be joining us. That's confirmed. Her injuries do not allow her to join us at this time. So that's
really?
Kind of a bummer.
Oh,
yeah.
Tough.
Yeah, she hurt her back. And when you're a hooper, when you hurt your back, you're pretty much done. So that is that. That neither costs us money or loses money because, remember, her travel was arranged through Anthony Shave through Frequent Flyer Miles and so forth. She was going to room with Aaron, so it's neither here nor there. It's just a bummer because she would have been a nice little perky addition. I had her slotted for the opening act of the Cascade of Stars, so that's a little tough. Then let's see here. As far as, I mean, if you guys have checked out the hotel and registration counts as of recently, we're at a total of about 70% total. Embassy Suites is definitely looking good. Marriott's in the toilet. And to be honest, I'm a bit pessimistic as to whether or not we'll reach our 80% total that the convention center and the hotels want us to reach in order to get those comped rooms and such. We'll see. You know, we still got about 20 some odd days. You know, it's going to be close. I mean, right now, festival registrations, 254, you know, and our 269, approximately. but we were, you know, we were budgeted for 320, 325. So once again, I don't know if we're going to make that. You know,
Matt, isn't the hotel cutoff today?
The hotel registration cutoff is today. So the fact of the matter is, we're not going to make it.
But we will have more walk-in registrations.
Yeah, in terms of registrations, I think we're going to have more people. That's great. But the hotel, as of today, by contract, would say, look, you didn't make it, so you got to pay. So either way you slice it, we're going to have to pay.
Well, I don't think that's right. I think that they can release our room block now for sales to other customers, but anyone who calls and reserves at their regular rate, we will still get credit for them. We will get credit for any reservation made under IJA, even though it's at the non-IJA rate.
Right, and on top of that, they don't have to enforce the policy, the contract that says we have to pay 80%. They might waive that. They might not.
That's right. They waived our requirement at the Marriott in 2009 because we so fantastically overachieved at the Embassy Suites.
Okay, well, I'll talk to Janice right about that. I'm always going with worst-case scenario. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I think that's prudent. I think it sounds like it's out of our hands either way. So.
Right, yeah. The hotel could say, well, that's what we did in 2009, but this is 2012. Sorry.
Right.
You know, there's nothing we can do to stop that. And certainly, if more people register and more people register for the fest and pay for the hotels, that's still good. That's, I mean, good is good. But that's where we're at as far as registrations and so forth. Warren Hammond is doing an excellent job with championships. He's got it all lined up. He's good to go. And then, once again, we are still without a Cascade of Stars director. I've been asking around. I just get people are like, no, that's fine. If I could pay Dan Holtzman to do it, it's going to cost us $2,000. I don't think anybody wants to do that. So it's looking like it's going to be me and Jim Maxwell. Probably at this point, running that. And then let's see here. But one thing that came up, Warren's working on MCs. He's got MCs for individuals and team comps. And we thought about doing the Jugheads for the juniors competition MCs. What do you guys think of that?
That would be cute.
Do they have a competition act?
No. At present, they do not. No.
Well, it's too late if they don't. So that I think.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. Yeah,
I think that's a sweet idea.
Yeah.
You know,
talk to Paul.
Former champion. Yeah, Paul. We thought either having just Paul do it, because Paul could do it solo, or we could have, you know, six or eight of the older Jugheads kind of go out there and do their thing, because they're used to doing that from their own Juggle Jam and things like that.
I think it's a great idea, Matt.
And they're free, of course. That would be nice as well.
Yeah.
So,
and it's honoring them. That's nice. I think it's great.
So throwing that out there, Warren and I are going to get on that. We talked about it during Boulder, and, yeah, it might work. Even Luke Wilson thought it was a good idea, so that's a good thing.
Cool.
Then, let's see, T-shirts, Crash and all those guys, Crash and Ross and I are working on it, so that's what looks like it's going to happen. I sent you guys an email just to show you what the final two mock-ups are, either the yellow and green or the blue and green. And one idea I had was perhaps to have the festival shirt be, say, the yellow and green, just for example, just be the yellow and green. And then for, like, festival volunteers or workshop leaders or even the VIP guests and so forth, have another color. You know, that would be one option, to have another color made, just some shirts made for them and with maybe festival volunteer on it or something like that. Or just to avoid the hassle of having multiple screens, because anytime you switch colors, you have to have multiple screens, then we'd go with the same shirt for everybody, you know, the yellow and green, for example. But so maybe on say, 20 or 40 shirts, we'd have printed, you know, festival VIP or volunteer or something like that, just a little something.
Yeah.
Anybody's thoughts?
I like it. Either way, whichever is easiest, whichever is cheapest, I think would be the best.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm looking for is cheap.
those of you who would get such a shirt, because you would be volunteers, or maybe all of you would get them, Would you be embarrassed to wear such a shirt that says you're a VIP or something?
I'd like volunteer more than VIP.
Yeah, I agree with Dave. Yeah.
Yeah, and that also highlights the volunteer aspect of the whole organization instead of.
Yes, it does.
I don't think. Yeah.
Back in Niagara, they gave T-shirts to all the workshop leaders that just had one club on it with workshop leader. I love that shirt. So yeah, stuff like that's awesome.
So, and once again, that's a thought. It may happen, it may not, depending on cost and so forth. Like at Barullo last year, they went crazy because like the festival organizers all had yellow shirts, and the festival VIP performers all had gray shirts that said talent on the back, or talentia, you know, and then everybody else got red shirts that just said, you know, it had said nothing on the back. It was, you know, festival attendee kind of thing. So that's some of the ideas that got this started, and we can keep it very simple with one shirt, or we can go crazy and, you know, have three or four different colored designs on the same black shirt, and, you know, we go that way too. So I'm going to talk to Crash about that.
Definitely like the yellow and green best. That pops. That's an awesome shirt.
Yeah, that's the one Ross likes too, so we'll probably just
do
that. Cool. Then Keith Nelson, Slammin', and Mark Hayward are confirmed again for Renegade. They're all good to go. You know, I just talked to them again because they wanted to confirm some things with me, and yeah, they're still good to go. Len Furman, Jogling, same. These are just people I've been going around with, and then Dave's got workshops locked down. You know, we're already at 50 plus. I think we'll get to 70 at least once he's talked to some of the VIP performers. Dave, I sent you all that email. You know that.
Yep. Thank you.
So there are some little things, like for example volunteer gifts. Right, that's been certainly a past practice. To be honest, this year we don't have the money.
Yeah. I think that if we do the
T-shirt thing, then that's the best I can do.
I think that's plenty.
That's more than enough.
Okay, and then the other thing I was thinking, once again, as far as the program and what you call it. Workshop schedule program, you know, in the past that we've done it both ways where they were one big thing. Sometimes they are two things. You know, for example, last year and in previous years when Mike was doing it, we had the nice glossy festival program with the bios of the award winners and basically the general festival schedule. And then we had the festival workshop program, which is kind of a piece of paper folded a couple times, and that was fine. And this year, once again, just if I'm looking at costs, I want to just do it all non-glossy, paper, simple. I mean, still foldable, still formatted similarly, but just on non-glossy paper, black and white printing, even for the cover, the whole shebang. What are your guys' thoughts on this?
I'm fine with it, as long as it looks okay. You know, it's the same amount of effort and design as put into it. I think I don't see any problem at all.
Agreed. I don't think this is the place to try to get fancy. It just doesn't matter that much.
Are you looking at running in them on the copier in the gym, or are you going to still get them printed?
I'm considering a couple options. One, get, you know, certainly if I got them printed, say at a Kinko's or something like that, or a local printer in Winston-Salem, I identified one or two when I was there, then that's going to be more than, maybe it won't. You tell me, what's our copier rental rates? You know, could we get them done cheaper there and fold them there? If that's the case, I would do it that way.
The last time in Winston-Salem, I want to say the copier was $700 for the week.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember what the copy count was on that. I'd have to look.
I have that, Kim. Mainly it's a workload issue, Matt, and producing hundreds of things on an office copier is not something we should ask our volunteers to do. I think an offset quick printer can do it better and cheaper for us.
Yeah, if we're going to a non-glossy version, then we're going to save some money at a place like Kinko's. So maybe that balances it out. We just go through a Kinko's or some other copier. I was also considering seeing if I could get my school to do it.
Yeah.
You know, like we have.
That's not a bad idea, but then you also have to worry about shipping them.
Yep.
Right, yeah.
And that, and the,
I save
the
money that way, but I gain money elsewhere. Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Well,
it almost never pays to ship paper long distances. And, you know, the printers in Winston-Salem have already paid to ship the paper in, so it's, I can tell you what we paid in Winston-Salem last time. The copier rental for all week with tax, delivery, everything was $582, and we ran nearly 10,000 copies through that machine during the week. And that is not, yes, we printed show programs, workshop schedules, workshop handouts, and so on, and it adds up quickly.
That's crazy.
And I can tell you what the program, and it was a fancy program, admittedly. It had a four-color cover and all of that kind of stuff, and they were about...
It was beautiful. I mean, the thing was a work of art, and if I could do it again, if I had the money, I would, but...
Right. I'm just saying you won't be at nearly anything like this cost, and in just a second I'll tell you what it cost us in 2009.
Okay, so while you're digging that up, now, you know, the performers are pretty much squared away. You know, Pavel's workshop set, you know, he's got good numbers. He said he could go till 50. He wanted to keep it open until 50 people.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, he's got.
Well, how are you doing, though?
He's got 17 right now, and you know, so that's a good thing in the sense that. You know, he's going to get his money, and I'm not going to, you know, his honorarium. I'm just going to throw his honorarium into that because I had told him you get this or you get that. You don't get both kind of thing. And he's like, okay, workshop. So he's more than enough for him and his helper.
Yeah, I mean,
otherwise,
if I had the flexibility to sign up for that and I signed up for it and there were 50 people there, I would actually probably be kind of irked.
Right, exactly.
You're not going to get 50 people. There's only 17 now. You might get 10 more. I mean, I don't know how many more, but probably not a lot more.
Yeah. No, I'm thinking they'll get to about 20, 25 tops, and that's doable. Yeah. That's a healthy workshop size. That's not
for sure.
You know, horrible. And then right now it's really about just the little, neat, you know, the detail, little things here and there, you know. There's a lot of those, so I'm just going to start going down them with Kim tomorrow probably, and Mike, I'll probably be calling you as well, and then we'll see where we're at.
Matt, I just found the pricing from the 2010 Sparks Fest program. I had budgeted $1,100 for that program to be printed, and it ended up costing me $457 for 500 copies.
Yeah, so you went
that was
you did
with the
500?
Local printer. Well, yeah, I went with 500.
So, yeah, and that's another quick question. Certainly, we know where we're at right now in terms of numbers. We're at approximately 270. So I'm thinking make 400 copies max, or is that too few?
That's the number that popped into my head.
Yeah, I mean, as I start to look at all these little tiny details, I'm really trying to thin slice. You know, saving 50 bucks is not huge, but saving 50 bucks is saving 50 bucks.
Right.
Yeah. You know? Or saving 50 bucks is 50 bucks I could give to one of the VIPs because I don't have enough money to pay them their honorarium. You know what I'm saying? That kind of stuff.
Do you have a projection for like how lossy this festival might be? In the most pessimistic view that you could possibly make.
What's our projected losses?
Yeah, or gains? Maybe I'm asking the wrong question.
Well, I haven't looked at possible profits because we're not even close to what our projected festival attendance numbers thought would
right,
be
yeah.
Pretty even. I mean,
right. Yeah. I'm just curious if there is a number that we're looking at. Just
20.
My own edification. 20. Yeah. Okay.
In the whole 20.
Better than Sparks.
Well, that also, that seems like...
Sparks made money.
Because we're...
Sparks made money.
We're like...
I'm all back.
We're like 50 people under your projections, right?
A little bit more than that, I think. You know, I mean, remember, the original projection was 250, you know, but then we were in the
right.
hole for other things. So then now we're at approximately 270, but we raised the probable attendance to 325.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So let's say we come up towards 60 people at about $200 registration a person. It's about 12,000.
Yeah.
So we shouldn't lose 20 unless other things go off the rails.
Right. Right. Once again, Tom asked for my most pessimistic. So.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I'm curious my own edification.
You know, the hotel takes us with a bill that we didn't see coming, or the theater goes, hey, wait a minute, you were over, and our guys want double overtime because we were in the theater too long until 10 p.m., blah, blah, blah.
Are you saying we lose?
There's also risk related to the hotel rooms.
Yeah.
Are you saying we lose 20K if we get no more registrants at this point?
I think that's a worst case scenario, yes.
Okay, we'll definitely get more registrants. I mean, there'll be walk-in people for sure.
I agree with you completely. He asked for worst case scenario.
Yep. I want to know what were all of the pessimism that's going on this phone call right now.
This is me, Tom, this is me playing possum. Anything else we get at this point is gravy.
Right.
But the fact of the matter is, we're not there yet. We're not even close, in my opinion.
Right.
And what are you gonna do? So,
yep.
One area in which we are excessive is the number of registrants for competitions this year. According to Warren, we have, I think, if I remember correctly, something like 15 trying out for individuals, 12 trying out for juniors, and 5 or 6 trying out for teams at this point.
That's crazy.
And that's pretty much everybody because, you know, the registrations have closed. But that's 30-plus people, you know, trying out for competitions this year. Once again, we got a big Japanese contingent. So that's going to get interesting at the festival unless we have somebody else to speak Japanese. Otherwise, I'm going to have to help translate for them, especially if they're in the finals, like lighting and tech and that kind of thing.
Yeah, we were talking about that in Boulder, especially if you figure that the teams are multiple people. Unless a lot of people, don't make it through prelims and bail, you're going to have more than one out of every 8 people at the festival competing.
Yeah. Have all the people that have submitted stuff to prelims, have they all registered for the fest?
Yeah.
They have. Okay.
Yeah. There was one. Marilyn, are you still there?
No, she's not.
Okay. It's Masaki Hirano from Japan. He had paid for the festival, but he didn't have a credit card or something. He had some problems.
Yeah.
Wanted to register for the competitions or pay his competition fee at the festival.
Yeah.
I think that's fine.
Yeah, that's fine. And we wrote him back. We said he can pay on site because of the complications of him being in Japan.
Yeah. Warren had me write him. I wrote him in Japanese. He said the same thing. So, okay, we're all on the same page. That's fine.
Great.
So that's it. That's it, ladies and gentlemen. I want to keep it short.
Okay.
Cool,
any questions for Matt? Any other questions? Okay. Future Fest. Mike, I know you did email. I did not get that on the agenda.
Okay. Well, let me bring everybody up to date. As we speak tonight, we are under contract for 3 years of IJA festivals. Obviously, we're under contract for this year. We have a signed contract for Bowling Green 2013, which we intend to fulfill next year. We also have a signed contract that is still in effect for Winston-Salem 2014. Back in, I believe, October, November, the board's instructions were that we should cancel Winston-Salem 2014 and I should find some other place for us to go. We finally, I think Kim got in touch with the people there to let them know we want to do that, and we have about a month before we are bound to that contract without penalty. And they have come back with an offer for us to move our dates from 2014 in Winston-Salem to 2015 in Winston-Salem. They just don't want to lose our business. And they're willing to rewrite the contract with just a slight change in hotel rates for 2015 just to keep us on the hook. If you've had time to look at your email in the last few hours, you saw our write-up on that. There's no real risk for us to take this offer, But if it's simply kicking the can down the road and we don't have any intention of actually coming to Winston-Salem in 2015, I'd rather save everyone the time and aggravation of going through the exercise.
Right. I've heard a lot of complaints that we've gone back there so many times.
Yeah, same.
Well, you know, we had a lot of talk a year or 2 years, 3 years ago about why don't we find two or three cities that really work well for us and go back to them every third year, because we can't keep reinventing the wheel. And here's the biggest problem we've got, folks. If we really only bring 300 people to Winston-Salem this year, regardless of what the factors are, nobody is going to want to rent us a facility for a week or give us a good deal on 700 room nights of hotel rooms or anything else. We're going to fall below a threshold that makes us a very unattractive group to try and bring to your city. And we've got to really ask ourselves, is it worth trying to hold an annual convention?
Well, I think the question is that should we continue to trying to hold an annual convention at a convention center or facility?
Exactly.
At whose threshold we fall below. There certainly are other avenues that we might be able to explore, like falling under the BJC's model, where they basically offer a grant to an organization that submits a proposal to hold the festival on their behalf. I might be butchering the way that they actually would word it. There is a lot of information online. I've been looking into this recently, but I have not actually gotten around to submitting any kind of formal report. But personally, I don't see us really being in the arena of being able to go back to a convention center at the numbers that we're currently drawing in. I think that if we were just to talk to a couple of different major juggling festival organizations in the U.S., like Mondo, or I guess, you know, in North America, if we talked to Turbo or some of those other groups, and said, you know, hey, if you guys put on a summer festival, we'll give you guys, I don't know, whatever, you know, like a grant of $30,000 or $45,000, make it happen, put the IJA's name on it, we'd automatically have a volunteer base that is there. You know, they would be capitalizing on some of the goodwill and the connections that they have in their area. Would be, I think, collaborating with other like-minded groups right now is really where we need to be. There is certainly a question of making it happen and the amount of work that's going to take, or if that's even something that we want to pursue. I'm only voicing my own opinion right now.
Yeah, I think we really need to think outside the box we're in now, because I'm becoming increasingly convinced it's not like, well, we can't get a convention center because we only have 250 people. I think we can only get 250 people because we're in a convention center. One of the things that's definitely on my to-do list in Winston-Salem is to buy Noel Yee a beer and talk to him about what he's doing, because he's pulling like 800 people to Fire Drums, which is a completely different model.
Yeah.
But that's a lot of people.
It's definitely a different crowd of people that go to that, but I agree, it's incredible. Yeah, and I think this is a pretty major strategic and operational concern that we have about how we can best fulfill our mission by offering a program like the festival.
Well, what I'm hearing is we need to take some good hard looks at our model and at other people who are being successful and the models they're using, and we can't drag our feet on this, because otherwise we're closing possible opportunities that we have in front of us. We need to make decisions on this. We can't wait until, you know, another year to decide, okay, now where are we going to go in 2014? Because it just closes too many doors. So this is something that we need to seriously talk about online as much as possible. All of us do some research and talk to people and put our heads together and find what we want to do as far as our festival.
Right.
So are there any other questions for Mike at this time for Future Fest? If not, thank you, Mike.
Thanks everybody.
Financial. I did not receive anything from Holly for this meeting. As I said before, I did send out a PDF file of the June and July payments. I'll be happy to put some more detail to that and send it to board members as well. And I listed the FEST payouts. Those are the typical checks that would be made out during the FEST. Dave, I guess my question is to you, and to, as well as to the rest of the board. Do you all want to approve or deny any of those payments at this meeting, or should we just go as we have been and we'll pick up that new policy starting at next month's meeting?
Yeah, I don't think practically any of us could make educated decisions on something that came out an hour or two ago, and we've been going this way for a while, so I think it's time to go one more month. But I do think it's a great direction for us to start looking at that more. And
at
I don't even think we're going to end up saying no to much. I think it's just good for us to understand where the money's going.
At the FEST, I'll make sure to have a spreadsheet with everything on it as far as checks being written at the FEST. I'll need that for Holly anyway, so that's not a problem.
I guess I did have one thing to ask, and I don't know where best to ask it, so I'll just throw it out there now. I mean, I had asked Holly, you know, can I take a look at the ledger just so I have a better idea what's going on? And her answer was like, yeah, I can give you that with board approval, which seemed a little weird to me if the board has to approve letting the board see the financials for the organization.
Yeah, I don't know why she said it that way, because technically any IJA member that asks, if it's a regular member asking to see the complete books, which takes some time to put together and to make sure they're, you know, all in one place, because we did have that happen once, it needs board approval just so that the board knows it's going out to that member.
Right.
But for a board member, I don't understand that. So I've already emailed her. I did see that response. I did see that response, and I emailed her, and I said, why would he need board approval? He's on the board.
Okay, good. So that wasn't just me. I mean, I was like, if it's the path of least resistance, I guess we could all vote to let all of us see the records. But if we also just want to say that doesn't make any sense, show us the records, that's fine with me too.
Now, do you have a current version of QuickBooks?
Yeah, I do, actually.
Okay.
I think she was talking about giving it to me in PDF form, and I said, okay, if you also can give me the QuickBooks file. And it's she and I had another exchange where she said, I think actually there's a way to give you access to my file rather than giving you a copy of the file.
Right, and I did see that.
So she and I will talk about that, but just getting something I can look at would be a good start, because I'm feeling woefully out of the loop on stuff that I should probably know. So.
No problem. All right. Okay. Moving on to website team. Mike, are you still there?
Yes.
Okay. Anything? I did send the PDF attachment to the board email with the AMS project update that you had emailed out. So I don't know if you have anything to add or if any of the board has questions for you.
Nothing to add. I mean, all of the packages are just fantastically sophisticated and would do just unimaginable things that we can't really even contemplate doing ourselves, and would reduce the workload on our volunteers and provide much better service to our members and provide great continuity of service when we change volunteers or board members or chair people or anything like that. So they're all excellent packages, and if we can convince our either our membership or our donor to help fund this, it would be a great thing for the future of the IJA.
And I have been in touch with IWI. IWI is willing to fund the project. He had looked at the, I guess it's over a five-year period, approximately $30,000. That was the one he looked at. But IWI did ask for additional information as far as who would upkeep the system, who would maintain things, which I have emailed Mike. So,
okay, well, I'll send back a specific response on those. But the idea behind all of these systems is that it's all web-based administration, and we would distribute the tasks to the same volunteers that we're using now, or whoever the volunteers are.
Okay.
And they would have a lot more automation and a lot more streamlining and a lot less manual touches to do to run the organization. That's the first thing. The second thing is we don't have any software maintenance or updates or anything like that. That's what we're paying the package developer for. They provide us with all the upgrades, updates, the hosting, the bandwidth, the database, the backups, all of that stuff is what they're providing.
If you could just send me an email with that summarization in it, you know, something similar to that, I will forward it to EWE, and
okay.
Hopefully we'll get off the ground with this then.
Okay.
Any questions for Mike?
I'm still a little confused about some of this. I understand that it would make the a lot of the operations a lot smoother, but if one of, at least as I see it, as I see the whole situation of the IJ on the web. One of our biggest issues is just the way that the site looks in general. And if we're looking at, you know, 30 grand over the course of 5 years, and knowing that a lot of at least the publicly available stuff on the website, aside from the e-zine, it's all static pages. I guess I don't really understand why we don't just go along with, I don't know, hiring a WordPress developer for, you know, 10 grand and porting the whole thing over and making that look pretty. And I mean, that said, I definitely do understand the need for streamlining the membership databases and things, but it just seems to me that this is a tremendous amount of overkill. I mean, do we really need to have a system that we subscribe to, especially in the light of, you know, of our finances at the moment?
Yeah, I'm with Tom. I think I've said this before, but, you know, if EWE is up for paying for this, then I'm not really going to argue too much. But it does seem like overkill, and if the idea ends up being to pass on to the membership that they're going to end up paying $5 to $10 a year each for the website, I'm probably not going to be able to justify that.
Yeah, I mean, just considering that in terms of, you know, membership costs and things that we have discussed tonight, this would add, you know, as Dave said, an extra, you know, $10 per member that we have, and, you know, I think that this extra, you know, overhead cost would negatively impact our ability to fulfill the mission of the organization. And that's it. I definitely do understand and respect the need to streamline the administrative, you know, workflow that we're dealing with. I just don't know that this is the most efficient and best way to do it, but of course that I don't necessarily understand exactly what goes into the membership position or the volunteer positions that this would be helping.
Yeah. Well, even the most expensive system that we're contemplating would cost us about $5 per member per year. The most expensive one would be $23 over 5 years all in for 1,500 members, or you know, about $30 over the course of 5 years for 1,000 members.
Right. And if we're, I guess just looking at this in the light of the motion that we just passed about reducing the membership cost, that's effectively bringing the amount of membership revenue down to $24 per member instead of the 29, which, mm-hmm. I mean, it appears to me that it's an unsustainable way to be unless, you know, our plans really do kick in a very favorable way, which I know we're all kind of apprehensive about, or confident. I'm confident. I'm trying to keep confident. but yeah, I don't know. I recognize that there is a need that needs to be filled here, but a lot of my concerns relate around the appearance of the publicly facing website, because it's true that, you know, it is. Mm-hmm. Outdated, you know, even though it serves its purpose very well, our current website. But if we're going to be implementing an AMS system and not having any money left over for a designer or that kind of thing, you know, we're relying on maintaining the same volunteer force we've had, we're going to wind up having the same site that we always have. And the value that the people that are effectively paying for this, you know, I know that EWE will, fingers crossed, be contributing some money, and I'm not going to argue about that, as Dave says. You know, if this is in a way going to be maintaining the status quo for a lot of our membership. I don't think this is necessarily a direction that we need to be going right now, because our public image is suffering, even though, you know, our administrative processes are too. I think that our image right now is a larger issue than, you know, and this, of course, I'm not one of the people that deals with a lot of membership volunteer roles or tasks or whatever. So I feel that our image is more important right now than a couple extra hours of volunteer time.
Right, but we had also talked about this a few months back that,
yeah.
You know, we understand the need for this AMS to
right.
be put into place, hopefully, but
right.
several of us, I was one of them, you, Aaron, we all expressed then that, you know, our website just needs a good facelift.
Yeah, absolutely.
We need a new design. We need something fresh and new, and I think the reason why we keep focusing on AMS is not only because of the fact that we have a donor willing to help us out on the financial end of it and that it will help our volunteers, but also because it sounds like this is the most, I don't know, just my opinion, it seems like getting the AMS in place is the most intense part of this whole refurbishing of the website.
I think one of the problems here is just the vocabulary that we're using. Like, AMS and the physical appearance of the website are very, very, very different things.
Right.
And while there are some very nice templates that AMS will have for a publicly facing site, it'll still look like a templated thing, and that if we're looking at a bill, which may or may not be footed by a donor, of 30 grand, I feel like we could get a much nicer site for cheaper. Unless, I mean, maybe you would be interested in donating money to have, you know, a design overhaul on top of it, but that just seems like we're really asking an awful lot of a very generous person, and I don't want to overstay, you know, or, you know, ask too much. But just the whole thing is just, it kind of boggles my mind. I mean, I say that with all due respect to all people, but I'm very, very skeptical. And I don't know, maybe somebody else has other comments. I can keep talking if you'd like. But
you know, I hear what you're saying, Tom, and I want everybody to understand that the AMS is not, it, and I hope I pointed out enough examples in the sample client sites that all of them have. You can go and look at five different sites from five different clients, and none of them look alike, and they don't look like they came from a cookie cutter.
Well, they do and they don't. I had a chance to look through some of them. Most of them look like, I mean, if you compare those to the e-zine, I would say that the e-zine is better designed than a lot of those sites that have been pointed out to. And the e-zine is a WordPress template, and that's free. So, you know, I mean, I think we could find a WordPress developer for pretty cheap. Maybe, you know, we talked to Ross about this a while ago, but we talked to him about database management stuff too, which kind of scared him off, I believe. But yeah, I mean, I don't think that if focusing on the outward appearance of the public site that AMS is necessarily fulfilling that need in a way that is cost-effective. I think we could get something nicer for cheaper.
And
the public site.
But the AMS is 100 other things that we don't have now.
Yes, I recognize that. I guess I should amend what I said earlier about I feel like in terms of the direction of the organization, marketing and I guess the publicity of the group were negatively affected. Like, our membership numbers are dwindling in part because we're not capturing people whose sole impression of the IJ is the site. And I think that, you know, we'd convert more people if we looked nicer, you know, or if, you know, we put on a shirt. and I don't think that people are necessarily aware of the administrative problems, though I do acknowledge that there is a lot of work that needs to be done there. I just think that our strategic priorities are a little out of order here. But that said, again, you know, I'm not the person that deals with a lot of the things that AMS would help fix. So, that's just my 2 cents. And I'll shut up now.
Okay, anything else? All right, membership. Marilyn sent the membership numbers, which we have there. Education.
Kevin. Oh, my God, you guys are still going.
We're still going.
Holy moly.
We just decided to wait till you came back.
Yeah, right.
We missed your awesomeness.
We will now sum up everything you have missed.
Okay.
And you're right on time for education. Do we have anything for education?
I talked a little bit to Erin. She's taken the lead with education.
Right.
Just that the YEP Facebook has been more active and it has been improving, and any visits or likes or even if you fellow members would post the Facebook YEP link on your walls, I mean, that'd be great. We're at the point where we just want some more likes. We're excited for the festival again. Aaron's been receiving the emails and inquiries and such, and I think we have more interest than available slots in the festival YEP training. So that's a good sign.
Yay.
That's all.
Awesome. Okay. And marketing, promotions.
Yep.
Tom, you sent a VTC spreadsheet that I attached.
Yeah, I sure did. And I apologize for any confusion that might have caused.
Okay.
So I don't know how many of you took a look at the budget that I sent out. It's a retrospective budget, so it basically talks about stuff that has already happened. And it's all about the tutorial contest, which I guess it ended a while ago. I got an email from Vasil Magaranov, the guy who won fifth place. Out in Bulgaria, he got his package about, I want to say, like 45 days after I sent it. So everything is good and done with the actual program, you know, 2012 program now. But the budget that I sent out, it's a little bit different than other budgets you may have seen. It looks at both cash and in-kind revenue. And
hello.
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 Are you guys still there? Am I talking too fast?
Yeah, still there. Keep going.
Still there. Okay. So basically, this budget, it shows cash revenue, in-kind revenue, cash expense, and in-kind expense. And basically, the tutorial contest relies so much on donations from companies and from people and their time that I wanted to create a document. And this document is completely standard in a lot of nonprofit organizations. I didn't just go crazy and make something up. It's basically a way to account for donated time and products as well as, you know, actual, you know, money and paid time and paid products and all that stuff when it comes to running a program. So basically this document, it shows the real money that we made and the real money that we spent, but it also shows the actual cash value of time and products that have been given to the organization earmarked for this contest. So that it basically shows if we ever wanted to run this contest without any goodwill from anybody, this is what it would cost to do. So it shows sort of the actual, I guess, sticker cost of this thing. So that's where some of the big numbers that I got an email from Kim about. That's where those big numbers come from. You know, I did not actually spend, you know, $7,000 on this thing. This
much
was,
of it to yourself.
yeah, exactly. No. It shows, you know, I did a little bit of research and I saw what, you know, some people would count their time for and how much, you know, some of these videos cut. So I'll run down it really, really quickly. And if you guys have any questions, you can ask me. Or if you don't want me to run down it, I won't. But I think it's a good number for everyone to see. But, yeah, so cash revenue, we did a sticker thing. That kind of worked, kind of didn't. We made a couple of bucks. Not really much worth talking about. We've sold some more since the cutoff date for this budget. But that's, again, pretty negligible. It's, you know, 25, 30, 35 bucks. In-kind revenue, we got 53 videos this past year from, I want to say, what was it, like 12 countries, 13 countries, a lot of places. This has been a really, really big year. And I asked around some of my friends, some people that entered videos themselves, and I asked them what, you know, if the IGA decided that they wanted them to create a video that had the IGA's name in it and was a good video, well-edited, well-shot tutorial, what would they want, knowing that we're, you know, a nonprofit or whatever. The most common number was around $30. So the videos column on there, it, for in-kind revenue, it's a $30 a video at $53, or at 53 videos, rather, it's $15.90. That's not money that we made. That was product or videos that would have cost us approximately $15.90 to actually have made. So that's where that number comes from. Prizes, lots of prizes. All the prizes are listed there. We had how many? We had several vendors, lots of vendors. Gave stuff. The judges, I had 8 judges this year. I went, you know, just over minimum wage, call it $10 an hour. $10 an hour per judge, 8 judges, that's $800 judging time. So that's where that in-kind revenue is. The judges gave us their time. And then director, I put in about 200 hours of work. I did count on this year's project. So that's, you know, again, at $10 an hour, about $2,000 worth of time. So the total of in-kind revenue this year was $69.50. And compare that to the approximately $25 of actual money that we made. that brings us just shy of $7,000 in terms of money made, I guess, of in-kind revenue. So then when you go down to the expenses, you know, we gave all the prizes away. So that's all that in-kind revenue given away. That's an expense. The judges used up that time that they gave us. We used their time, their donations, so that's all a wash too. And so the in-kind expense and in-kind revenue minus the videos, which do not cost us anything. So we made a little bit of money on the videos effectively. We gained value from that. And so when you compare the revenue minus the expense, the thing made, or made, I'm making lots of air quotes right now, $356. More quotes right there. So all in all, it kind of broke even when you consider the amount of time that was contributed versus the actual expenses. We wound up spending $279 getting over $6,000 worth of, or around, what was it? Sorry, I'm getting off some page. Getting around $4,000 worth of prizes out. So basically, if we're talking about real money, we spent $279 to get lots of donated prizes that have a very, very, very real sticker cost out. So any way that you look at it, I think the contest was a pretty big success. I'd like to, I mean, it would be neat to figure out some way to monetize this without destroying its freeness to the people that enter. But I think that we did a lot of good for this program this year, if I am allowed to say that.
You may.
Does anyone have any questions about the budget? At all. I know it's kind of a complicated looking thing, but it's pretty simple when you pick it apart.
Just one thing I was going to clarify, because I thought it was interesting when I asked you some of these same questions. I'm pretty sure you told me that one of the real advantages to doing a budget like this is that if you're going to look for grants,
yeah,
this is the kind of thing that's very interesting to them, to see kind of how much value you're creating via donations and so on.
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, I'm working on, I guess, my master's in nonprofit arts administration right now, and this is the standard budget template that you have to turn in with any project that deals with programs, expenses. People were surprised that I'd never seen it before the class. But, yeah, this is the kind of thing that grant writers like to see, because it does show the amount of public support behind a program. It's also good for, you know, if somebody is handing over the director position for a program, kind of helps them see what the actual thing looks like, you know. Because, you know, if I ask somebody to run this thing for me next year and they didn't really know the actual expenses, or, you know, if they didn't have this document, they might be a little bit more lost. And assuming they have knowledge of how this document works, it contextualizes the thing in a very tangible way. So that's why I created this for this year's program. Any questions about this thing?
I was just going to ask that. Any other questions? All right. You have anything else, Tom?
I guess I have one little comment. And this is about the IJA's Facebook page. We recently broke 3,000 fans on it, basically 3,000 people who get to see our updates every time we make an update. I think we're at 3,078 right now. And just an interesting comment about that. Of that 3,000, fewer than half of those people live in the U.S. Ooh. And of that, there is... What's that?
I said, how ironic.
Yeah. I mean, it's great. You know, it shows that something is happening, you know, which is not necessarily indicative of of our actual membership numbers. You know, these are people that have demonstrated enough interest in our organization and our goings-on to click a button, you know. And now we just need to get them to open their wallet and support us financially. And something that's interesting here, too, is the nice thing about Facebook is it takes a lot of people's information, and of that, of our number, there are somewhere between a quarter and a fifth of people that follow us on here are not native English speakers. They're Spanish speakers, native Spanish speakers. And I think that helps reflect the impact that we're starting to have on Central and South America. And I know that Aaron has been working with Hiar Berboa, who's a Chilean. He's either Chilean or Argentinian, and he's been doing a lot of translating for us. And I think that along with the reduction in membership costs, assuming that we also start getting more Spanish language content, you know, whether or not it's primarily Spanish language or if it's translation of existing articles on the e-zine, I think that we could start tapping into that market a lot more effectively. But there's potential for growth that we're starting to see through our electronic publications. So that is an interesting thing that I wanted to convey.
Great.
Yeah.
Any other questions, comments for Tom? If not, we already went through our motions, so we're into Varia, where I did have three different items listed there. Item A is that Len Furman had contacted me by email. He's going to be a speaker at the World Future Trends Summit in October. And I'm just summarizing this from the board agenda. He basically asked if it was okay for that group to bill him as an IJA person, because they billed him as being from the Bank of America and from the International Jugglers Association. I gave him the go-ahead for that printed material to say that he's an IJA member. So unless anybody has any objections to that, but it gives us some decent free publicity. So I just wanted everyone to be aware of that.
Yeah, I don't know if I would have objected in any case, but if he's saying he's a member, I almost don't know if we could stop him from saying that if he wanted to.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, he also donates a lot of his time with traveling, too. So, I mean, he's a member and volunteer, you know.
Yeah, and he's also, as it said there, his presentation is going to be using juggling as well. So it's good all the way around.
Yeah.
B is the vendor discount program that Dave had sent to me. Dave, I put this under Varia because I wasn't sure if you wanted a motion on it or if this was just...
Oh, I think we already did
the
motion that I could think of that really needed to be made.
Yeah.
The rest of it's mostly just information for anybody who's curious what's going on.
Right. So I stuck that there. So if anyone has questions on the vendor discount program for Dave. Okay. If not, make sure you read through that. And item C is Fest Director for 2013. We had... the person that Aaron spoke to, I guess.
And Jared Davis.
His name, yes.
Yeah, Jared Davis is interested.
Who had expressed interest. Back in November, David Kane had expressed interest to me at the Pittsburgh Fest. I have not heard back from him. I did email him to see if he was interested at all. Still, his brother went to school at BGSU, so he's very familiar with the campus and with the people there. I've emailed the board to say that I would be interested in being volunteer director as well. And Mike Sullivan had expressed interest to me as well that he would be interested. I just put this in the Vary as something to start looking at. If there's anything you want to know from those who are interested in the position, email me any of your questions and I'll send them on, or, you know, one of you can send them on to any or all of the people who have expressed interest.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, I would think if we're in the surprising position of having multiple people who are volunteering to do it, then, yeah, we probably should have some sort of application so we can make an educated decision.
Yeah.
We did have a questionnaire back for the 2010 festival, and I can forward that to the entire board. You can take a look at those questions, see if there's anything you want to change, any additions you want made to it, but at least we're not reinventing the wheel. The board at that time had some questions. I want to say there were 15 or 20 questions on that questionnaire.
Okay.
Anything else for Varia tonight?
I have one thing I neglected to mention in my festival report, and I want to put it in just to give it fair due. There will be no historical lounge this year. When I contacted Paul Bachman and let him know that, yeah, we've got the comps for you, we're good to go, he said, sorry, it's just too late. I got multiple reasons why I can't do it. I'm not sure if it's because his illness is getting too bad or anything. I didn't go into too much detail with him. But just so you guys know, it is not going to happen. And that's my bad, certainly. Although, once again, he vaguely mentioned that even if we'd gotten back to him in April, he might not be able to go given what his health is right now. But on the other side, you know, Dick Franco and he both kind of said, hey, thanks for kind of not leaving us hanging. Keep it in mind for next year.
Thanks, Matt.
That's it.
Anybody else for Varia? Okay, if not, we need to set the next meeting date. Dave, do we have a spot in the workshop schedule for or Matt? Do we have a set time and day for our AGM?
We do.
Yes.
Yay, and what date would that be?
I believe it's the 17th. Give me a second here.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll race. It is...
17th at 12, yeah, 17th, Wednesday's the 18th, pardon me, and it's at noon.
High noon, all right. Jimmy Nickel, who has been our parliamentarian the last two times in Winston-Salem, is available for us as parliamentarian once again, so I'll call her back and let her know that the day and the time. She usually shows up an hour ahead of time just to answer any questions that the board may have and to review the agenda. So I'll be putting the agenda together probably before we even leave for Winston-Salem. So if anyone has items for the agenda, please try and send them to me as soon as possible.
Cool.
Hey, Kim, I'm noticing something now that I'll just mention to you, and I don't think we need to settle it now. So in trying to schedule workshops and stuff, I was talking to Erin about the timing of the YEP training, and there was already this unfortunate thing that the time she'd requested makes it conflict pretty squarely with planting the juggling seed.
Okay.
It also conflicts with the business meeting.
Oh.
Ooh, that could be it.
So I think she wanted to try to move the YEP training up so it'd be like 11 to 1. I don't think that's going to work.
No,
I think it's
that
inviting all kinds of conflicts and... Yeah, you guys should talk about it, but I'm guessing it needs to go back to like 10 to 12, and that will avoid the business meeting, and it will at least avoid some of planting the juggling seed.
Yeah.
Yeah, planting the seeds at 11 on Thursday the 19th.
Right, and Aaron had wanted to get training from 11 to 1, and I don't see how that's going to work for you guys.
Right.
It also conflicts with the Flamingo Club, if that interests you.
Well, I'm always at the Flamingo Club because I sponsor that award, but...
Right.
So, that they do that whether I'm there or not. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. So you should
Matt,
probably talk to Aaron, and then let me know what you guys want to do, but right, I don't see how that's going to work for you guys.
All right. I'll give her a call. Matt, did you say something about juggling seed?
No, I was just, okay. I'm letting you know, confirming so you know where you are in the schedule, right? Master schedule as you requested, as promised, Thursday,
yep.
11 a.m., planting the seed, right? That's what you wanted,
perfect.
Right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Good to go.
All righty. Is there anything else?
With regards to the next month's meeting, I'm still not really sure what my deal is, whether or not I'm actually going to be able to be present at the meeting.
Okay.
I get one day off of work for a week. Right now I'm performing up in Busch Gardens at Williamsburg. So I'll try my very best, but if I'm not there, I will get, I'll prepare a document for somebody else to relate.
Okay.
I can impose.
or even if there's, even if you're able to call in for even part of that time.
Yeah, I will.
You know, we can always stick you on speakerphone.
Okay.
Were you still going to ship that mannequin with the curly hair down, just in case?
Yeah.
Good.
It's going to be a
good
surprise next year.
Aren't
yeah.
we just getting the full-size, cardboard cutout of them? I thought we were just... They're cheap right now. They're only $20. All right. Anyway, adjournment. If there's nothing else for tonight, we need a motion to adjourn.
I'll make that motion, Dave.
I was going to say, doesn't anyone want to end? And a second?
I'll second. This is Richard.
Okay. So the meeting has been moved to adjourn and seconded, and it is officially adjourned at 10:40 p.m. if there are no objections. Excellent.
And you guys, don't get too scared. This was longish.
Yes. Longish? This was long.
Yeah.
Bye, everybody.
Thanks
for having us. Enjoyed it.
Thank you, guys. Bye, everyone.
Matt, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay. Do you just want to talk tomorrow, or?
Yeah, I'll call you tomorrow. What's your time? Okay. What's your time schedule looking like tomorrow? You got anything?
Tomorrow, Thursday, I am totally open all day.
Okay, I'll call you sometime a little early-ish your time, maybe like 10 or 11 your time.
That's fine. I'm
okay.
An early riser. Sounds good.
Yeah, same.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, Kim.
Bye.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.